It was just that I recognized a man who turned up just then, and I couldn't let him see a cop there, could I?
Who was he?
Asked Marie, who had materialized at Rosie's side. Rosie shook her head.
Even though I have a damn good memory, I just can't place him, Sarge.
I recognized him the moment I saw him, but try as I might, I can't recall where from. Marie put her arm around Rosie.
Don't worry. It'll come back to you when the adrenaline has worn off. And well done, Flower. Let's get back to the station and debrief you.
As they drove back, Rosie described the man as shabbily dressed in scruffy chinos, a polo shirt, and a nylon tracksuit top. He was tall with slicked back hair and wearing wire-rimmed glasses.
Probably someone you helped put away at some time or another, said Charlie Button. Maybe a look through the sex offenders file might jog your memory.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Hope you don't mind me saying so, but it sounded as if you were rather enjoying yourself with your little friend, Will.
Charlie gave her a smirk.
Things were getting a bit steamy in there, weren't they?
Rosie cuffed the back of Charlie's head.
Mind your own business. Will was very helpful. He told me quite a lot, and I have his mobile number if we need to follow anything up.
Cradle snatcher.
Eavesdropper.
Just shut up, you two, growled Max. This is serious, it's no joking matter.
We know that,
murmured Charlie.
And you need to chill. Rosie's fine, so stop worrying.
They drove the rest of the way back in silence. Jackman knew he'd been right. Max Cohen had fallen hook, line and sinker for Rosie McKeltry. Chapter 15. The following day, Jackman was in his office before 7. He had not slept well, and had decided to get up early and get as much office paperwork out of the way as he could. At 8 o'clock, Marie backed into his office carrying 2 coffees and a packet of jammy Dodgers. She pushed his door closed with her hip.
I saw you were busy, so I left you in peace.
Appreciate it, Marie. And so is that coffee.
She sat down opposite him and tipped sugar into her mug.
I've been thinking about Tony Clarkson. What with last night's caper, I pushed her to the back of my mind. But then I woke up at 2 this morning, worried sick about her.
Jackman put down his files.
You know, for the first time I caught a glimpse of what young Ethan Barley saw in her. She's devastated by the thought of Emily being taken, isn't she?
No wonder. When you think what happened to Shauna Kelly. Tony was lucky to come out alive.
Marie placed her mug on his desk.
And talking of Shauna, Uniform tells me that one of her school friends confirmed that Shauna confessed to attending a party in, as she put it, some filthy hovel filled with gorgeous fit blokes and dirty old men.
So it's as we suspected. Oh, that poor mother.
Marie shook her head. Then she asked,
When are we going out to Windrush?
We're all organized for 11 this morning.
Then if it's all set up, would you mind if I took one of the kids and drove out to Allenby Creek, just to do a quick recce of those houses there? Maybe someone saw something the night Shauna drowned.
Jackman piled up his files.
Forget the kids. Finish your drink and I'll come with you. We've plenty of time.
Excellent. I'll go grab a pool car.
No one they spoke to knew or had seen anything of Shauna Kelly. Jackman was beginning to believe they had wasted their time. The last cottage they tried was a mess of weathered wood, cracked and broken tiles and crumbling brickwork. But smoke was rising from the chimney, and a pleasant aroma of baking lingered in the doorway. A woman answered their knock, calling out for them to come in. She was around 40 with long hair, already greying, and pulled up into an untidy French plait. She had a warm smile.
Oh yes, those nice officers called the day before, but...
She shrugged and rubbed a flowery hand across her forehead.
I couldn't help them. I went to the market in the morning, then never left the cottage again.
You live here alone, miss? Asked Jackman politely.
Seal. Megan Seal, Inspector Jackman. And no, this is my father's place. I'm just looking after him for a bit. He's getting on, and he's been proper poorly.
Did the police speak to him as well? Asked Marie.
No, Sergeant. Dad was asleep and, well, I leaves him when he drops off, like. He's getting forgetful and he wanders a bit too. It sounds awful, I know, but when he's asleep I can relax for a while, get a few chores done.
Jackman looked around the old kitchen and noticed the cigarette ends nestling in an ashtray close to the fire.
Does your father sometimes go out at night, Miss Seal?
The woman dusted flour from her apron.
Yes, he does, unfortunately. I do my best to stop him, but...
She gave a helpless shrug.
Do you think I could have a quick word with him? I promise not to upset him.
Jackman smiled at her.
I'm not sure you'll get very far. He came in earlier to tell me that Winston Churchill was about to address the nation, and would I make sure that the wireless was tuned into the home service?
Just for a moment or two.
Jackman upped his smile.
Of course, but don't expect too much. Oh, and if he calls you Gordon, that's his son, my brother. He died 10 years ago, but Dad still thinks he's here.
Jackman's heart went out to the woman.
I'll not keep him long, I promise.
He'll be out back in the lean-to. His name is Stan.
Leaving Marie to talk to Megan, Jackman walked through the ramshackle cottage and out into a strange narrow room with windows on three sides. It might have passed as a conservatory if properly built, but this wasn't the case. Jackman sincerely hoped it would remain standing just a little longer.
Stan?
Hello there.
My name is Jackman. Can I have a word?
The old man stood staring out of the grimy window, towards the marsh. On hearing Jackman's voice, he turned and looked at him without curiosity.
You know this part better than most, I'm told.
Lived here a long time, I guess,
began Jackman. Stan sat heavily back into an ancient armchair, and in a weak ray of watery sunshine, Jackman saw thousands of dust motes rise up around him.
Have you been out on the strand at Darklands?
Jackman tried using his almost forgotten dialect in the hopes of jogging the old man's memory.
Aye, a few nights back.
The voice had the deep gravelly timbre of the heavy smoker.
See anything interesting?
The old man frowned.
Mayhap, but my mind's a jumblement. I seems to think I saw a pretty lass, and a truck where a truck shouldn't be. Out there in the moonlight it was. No, shouldn't be there.
What kind of truck, Stan?
Big dark thing. All thick wheels. Too many lights and growling noise.
Jackman's brow creased.
A 4x4? An off-road vehicle? Like as much, I suppose.
Stan wrinkled up his leathery face.
But the man who drove it were worse. One look at his face and you'd see he's as black as the devil's nutting bag. He spoke to the lass, and the next thing she were running like a hare.
Where to? He pointed vaguely towards the sea. Then he swung round and stared at Jackman.
When are you going to fix that broken gutter pipe, Gordon? That drip, drip, drip keeps me awake at night.
Jackman looked into the roomy eyes and saw that his window of opportunity had closed.
I'll fix it, Dad,
he said softly, and slipped quietly out of the musty-smelling room. Outside in the car, Marie looked at Jackman eagerly.
A 4x4, you say?
And a pretty girl.
Jackman bit his lip. But the old guy's mind comes and goes, and he'd probably not be able to tell us much more if we sat with him all day.
But she was here. This is where they brought her, isn't it?
I believe it is, but we can't prove it.
Jackman drummed a tattoo on the steering wheel.
Damn it. It's almost worse than not knowing at all.
Marie stared at her watch.
We should be getting back, sir.
I'm sure there will be some loose ends to tie up before we head out to Windrush. Jackman grumbled something and pulled the car onto the road. At 10 o'clock, Jackman gathered the team in the CID room.
"Have you organised a warrant to check out Windrush, sir?" asked Charlie Button.
Jackman nodded. "I know Broome promised cooperation, but I've hedged my bets. I've swung it with upstairs, and a constable has already collected it from the magistrate."
He looked at Max and saw that the young man was his old self again.
"I'd like you to have a word with Stefan, our Polish interpreter. See if he's heard anything on Eastern Europe grapevine regarding a missing teenager, a girl who calls herself Emily. Tell him we believe she's in grave danger, Max, and make sure he understands this is not just an excuse to harass them, okay?"
Max nodded. "I'll do it now, before we go."
There was a knock on the door, and they all looked up as PC Andy English entered, carrying a folder of files from the council's planning office and the signed warrant. He handed them to Jackman.
"We may need this, sir, if my hunch about the big bloke's correct."
"Fair give me the creeps," he did. "I'm dead certain he's what my old gran would have called lucking up top, and he's built like a brick outhouse. I wouldn't want to upset him."
"Benedict Broome did say that Mr. Lee could get a trifle overprotective of the place. Frankly, I can't wait to meet him. Now, what have you found out about the planning permission?"
"Well, Broome does have permission for a material change of use for the proposed development. It seems that he has requested to modify the old sanatorium, add certain other structures and make it a sanctuary, just as the big guy said. Most of the plans have been accepted. It's just that he seems to have altered the specifications a dozen times."
Andy stared at the paperwork in his hand.
"The man in planning said he was a nightmare, and even now, when work is almost about to begin, he's not convinced that he won't try to change things again."
"What do we actually know about Broome?" Jackman asked.
"Broome, on his own, seemed to be prepared to spend a fortune on the old place. Who, other than major players in the business world, had that kind of money to flash around in this gloomy financial climate? Very odd."
"I checked him out, sir, and he's not known to us. All we know is that he lives with his housekeeper in one of those big houses along the waterway. You know those old three-story Victorian terraces?"
Jackman recalled the educated speaking voice.
"You mean Admiralty Row? That's one classy address. He must be loaded if he owns that property and the Windrush estate."
Andy nodded.
"Absolutely. You do know the old story, sir, don't you?"
Jackman nodded.
"About how the sanatorium was won in a wager. Is it really true?"
"Oh, yes. Broome won the place playing poker."
Marie grinned at him.
"How come the lottery only gets me a tenner once a year?"
"You and me both, Sarge.
Anyway, I've asked Kevin Stoner to keep digging into Broome's history."
Jackman nodded. "Okay, so even though it all seems kosher, you still think we should check the place over?"
Andy looked at him.
"Absolutely, sir. Micah Lee definitely steered us away from parts of it. Plus, he was really uptight about our being there at all. We need to return and not just go with the scenic tour."
Jackman nodded. "Okay, that's good enough for me, Constable. Get your team together. We'll move out at 11 o'clock.
Chapter 16. Across the marsh, the morning sky was as blue as the Aegean, but a cloud of foreboding hovered above the officers. Max and Gary had stayed behind to chase up the interpreter and keep the office running, while the rest of the team headed out to the old house at Roman Creek. Uniform would carry out the main search, but Jackman wanted to see the place for himself. Charlie stared out of the car window.
"Strange, isn't it, sir? Although it's close to the marsh, this area's on a rise."
Jackman looked ahead of them.
"You're right. It's something of an anomaly. It's almost a hill."
"It was once an island, or so I'm told," said Marie.
"When the land was reclaimed and drained, this place, now called Roman Bank, was then called Rumsey. I think it means island or dry ground in marsh belonging to a man called Rum, same as the one in Hampshire."
Jackman gazed at her in admiration. "You never cease to amaze me, Marie. Let's hope your interest in these old places proves useful."
Marie smiled, but as the car drew closer to Windrush, Jackman noticed that she was looking increasingly anxious. What's the matter? He asked.
It's changed so much since I was here last, she said, and I get the feeling it's not for the better.
She looked out of the window at the rambling and desolate old sanatorium.
I can't believe how different this place feels now from when I came here, on that health and safety course.
That was decades ago, wasn't it, Sarge? Rosie laughed. She nudged her younger colleague.
Charlie here was probably still in nappies.
Uniform were already out of their vehicles, and Andy English stood waiting for Jackman to give the go-ahead. Jackman took the search warrant from his pocket and nodded at him. English returned the nod, and he and some of the other men went quickly up the steps to the front entrance of the old building. The team hung back with the rest of the group at the bottom of the stone steps, all waiting for their first glimpse of the man who had made such a strong impression on PC's English and Stoner. It didn't take long for him to open the door.
My God! Conan the Barbarian lives, whispered Rosie, eyes wide.
Micah Lee was a beast of a man. He had a thick mop of dark hair, and a face that looked as if it had been crudely chiselled out of a rough hunk of granite. His eyes were deep-set, under heavy, overhanging brows. He was tall and powerful, although not in an athletic way. His strength seemed more inherently Neanderthal than developed through exercise. Jackman found it impossible to judge his age, but what struck him most was the almost tangible sense of resentment at their presence. Lee's lips were tight with anger.
"Sensible of you to organize that warrant," Marie said quietly. "I have a strong feeling we'll need it."
Jackman stared openly at the Goliath of Windrush. For one awful moment, he thought that Micah Lee would have to be physically restrained, and he wasn't sure how many officers it would take. PC English bravely approached the man, told him that they had Mr. Broom's full approval for a detailed search, and mentioned that they also had a warrant. Lee seemed to crumble. Jackman saw a wave of emotion wash across his craggy face. His intense anger subsided, replaced with trepidation and an almost childlike fear.
Fear of what? Jackman wondered.
Just do it,
Micah said suddenly. Then he turned on his heels and marched back through the front doors. Jackman watched him disappear inside, then called out to Andy and his colleagues to go in. Top to toe, pay extra attention to anything underground, cellars and the like. Anywhere that could conceal a missing girl. Call me if you find anything, okay? A tall, bald-headed sergeant immediately took over, and soon men and women were heading off in pairs to check out the big old house, the numerous outbuildings, and the surrounding grounds.
"Sir,"
the sergeant called over to him,
"would you like to help or stay with Mr. Lee?"
"We'll join you, sergeant." Jackman had no wish to play nanny to a giant, volatile baby. "Which area shall we cover?"
"According to my aerial map, there's a ward block around the back, sir. It doesn't seem to have been prepared for renovation yet, so watch your step. It could be dangerous."
The sergeant placed a tick on his list and turned away. They made their way around to the back of the building, towards the single-story building that housed the additional wards. The exterior had once been white, but now great patches of rendering had crumbled away, leaving the brickwork exposed and decaying.
"This could take some time," said Rosie, picking her way over some fallen debris. "This place is bigger than it looks."
Marie nodded.
"It's a rambling old pile, and it's a sin to have let it fall into ruin like this. When I was here it was run down, but at least it was still usable."
Jackman pushed a door open, and they all peered inside. The ward had been long and wide, with one side opening out through a series of French doors onto concrete terraces. Jackman reminded himself that it had once been a TB sanatorium, and in those days they pushed bed and patient outside to get the benefit of the fresh air. Now the windows were cracked and broken, and plaster and rotten woodwork lay scattered across the floor.
A thick haze of dust motes swam in the shafts of sunlight that penetrated what remained of the glass. In one corner, a pile of old metal-framed institutional beds had been heaped together. In another, a stack of broken bedside cupboards and rusting skeletons of chairs. Jackman saw something move, and a rat broke cover and ran for a dim gaping hole in the wooden floor. Marie sighed.
Maybe we should stick together. We can't afford any broken ankles or cuts and bruises from all this leftover junk.
Shame Big Micah never got this far with his clean-up, grumbled Charlie Button. He's done a great job on the front and the sides of the house.
I think this part's going to be demolished, Jackman said. I glanced briefly at some of the plans that Andy showed me, and as far as I can remember, the back of the building is destined to become some kind of sheltered garden with seats and water features. Not that my imagination is capable of seeing it right now.
He took a deep breath and stepped inside. Marie, Rosie and Charlie followed, and they began their sweep. They searched every room, each cupboard and corridor. There were five wards, identical in their design. As they reached the final ward, Jackman called out,
"I think we can declare this area clear. Agreed?"
Rosie and Charlie agreed immediately, but Marie seemed lost in thought.
"Marie?"
"I'm thinking we need old plans, old maps of the area. Ones that go way back to when the original house was built."
She looked at Jackman, a light glinting in her eyes.
"When I was here last, there were all sorts of stories flying around about the history of this place. I read a bit about the general history, just because it interested me. But there were other stories."
"Like what?" asked Rosie.
"Like ghost stories," said Charlie excitedly.
"More like legends and folklore. One was about wreckers."
Jackman brushed unsuccessfully at some plaster dust on his jacket.
"Did we have wreckers along this coast? I thought that was Cornwall."
"We had some, all right. It's documented that Mablethorpe had its share, and if the old stories have a grain of truth in them, it looks like this area tried their hand at it too."
Jackman stared out towards the marsh.
"Well, the wash is just beyond this marsh, and then it's the North Sea. It's possible, but it's a very long way to drag their illicit cargo. How do they get it here, I wonder?"
Marie rubbed her chin.
"That's why I want to see some old maps, because I'm thinking tunnels and old storerooms." "Then maybe Uniform will find something. They are checking for cellars, aren't they?" said Rosie.
Jackman nodded.
"Maybe. But if Marie is right, and this house was used by wreckers for hiding their illegal haul, then the entrances would be concealed. We do need old plans."
Rosie squatted down on her haunches.
"Maybe Fred Flintstone in there has some, if he's been doing all this work."
Somehow Jackman did not think that Micah Lee would have the plans. Benedict Broom would be the one to contact for those. But before they went down that route, there was another way. Jackman took out his phone and keyed in Max's number. It took only seconds to relay what they needed, and then he shut his phone and looked at Marie.
"He's sourcing them now. And if he finds anything useful, he'll ring back and Gary will drive out with them. If Max hits a brick wall, then we'll go to Broom for help. Although I'm sure Max's IT skills will access everything we need in less time than it would take to get Benedict Broom to open his front door."
Marie straightened up.
"I think we should see how the others are doing. These wards are holding no secrets. Shall we go find the sergeant?"
"Anything so far?"
The sergeant in charge shook his head.
"Nothing substantial, sir. Some of the rooms have been used recently, but it's probably just Michael Lee staying over. He seems pretty attached to this place, considering he doesn't own it, and he's obviously working his fingers to the bone."
He passed a broad, knuckled hand over his shaven head.
"But regarding the search, there are no signs of anyone having been held here at any time. But this is a big area to cover. We've hardly scratched the surface yet."
"Well, the ward block at the back is clear, so you can tick that off your list. Oh, and I've requested any architect's plans on the original building, and any old maps,
just in case there may be rooms or cellars that were sealed up in later years, Jackman added.
Good idea. For all we know, this place could be a rabbit warren of underground tunnels.
Marie started.
What made you say that, Sergeant?
Well, it may have nothing to do with it, but see that stretch of marsh over there?
He pointed across the fields to a broad stretch of wetland.
It used to be called Chapel Marsh. They reckon that back in historical times there was an old abbey out there, the coastline being different back then. Anyway, the sea took it when they flooded this part of the land, and all that was left was a tiny chapel. And that got used by smugglers right up until the time of the Second World War, when that got washed away too.
Marie's eyes lit up.
I've heard of that. But you mentioned tunnels.
Yeah. Apparently the smugglers used a system of tunnels to bring their contraband inland. Of course, a lot of them could have caved in or collapsed with the high tides and the bad weather, but they say that one or two were really well constructed. The locals and my old grandmother's one of them. Reckon they still exist somewhere around here, maybe underneath the Roman Creek sea bank. You've probably noticed it's a very unusual piece of higher ground, so tunnels could be possible. Just sit in one of the local pubs and you'll hear a load of old wives' tales about them.
Marie felt a tingle of excitement.
Did any of these tunnels connect with the house here?
The sergeant raised his shoulders.
No idea, Sergeant Evans. They may not even exist. It might all just be superstition and folklore. You never can tell, can you?
Marie grinned.
Oh, they exist. I'll stake my new Suzuki on it. Thank you, Sergeant.
She turned to Jackman.
So, what next?
I suggest we let these guys here continue and get back to base and see what Max has dug up. This search will take until the light goes, so we'd be better off doing a different kind of groundwork, using a computer instead of a shovel.
Chapter 17. The CID room resembled a Second World War chart room. Max had pushed several tables together, and they were covered in neat piles of maps, diagrams, and plans.
Oh my, who's been a busy boy then?
Rosie laughed. Marie glanced at him. Had Max blushed? Max pushed his rolled-up sleeves further up his arms.
I was just getting ready to pack Gary off to meet you. We've managed to get our hands on quite a lot of useful stuff.
I can see, said Jackman.
He clapped a hand on Max's shoulder.
Well done. We knew we could count on your computer skills.
The young Cockney looked proud.
Thank you, sir. I've found maps, plans, deeds, building permission applications, geophysical surveys and related data, and even aerial cartographical views of Windrush and the surrounding landscape.
We've tried to arrange them chronologically, said Gary. Oldest at the top and working down to present day. These are particularly interesting.
Gary held up a batch of geophysical printouts.
They were taken a few years back when an archaeological dig was planned for the Roman bank, but they couldn't get permission to bring in the diggers. They show the ground right up to and including the edge of the Windrush estate.
Marie stared at the papers.
I'm not sure what I'm looking at.
They are high-resolution images that show subsoil structures or traces of human activity.
Gary seemed to know his stuff. Marie was impressed.
He pointed to a shadowy dark square and a series of grey circles and lines. This is what they were after. The archaeologists believe that there was an ancient Roman villa on the spot, and this data supports their theory. They then widened the geophys to see what else might be there, but someone pulled the plug on them, and it never happened.
Marie felt a surge of excitement.
And their data actually covered part of Windrush.
Gary picked up a batch of paperwork.
Yes, right up to the walls of the house on the marsh side.
Jackman looked over Marie's shoulder. He frowned and jabbed a finger onto one of the maps.
What's this area here?
Is that one of the areas that's being redeveloped?
Asked Rosie. Jackman unfolded the plans Andy had given him.
No, all the renovation and new building will take place immediately in and around the house itself. The old stores and the barn area that you're looking at
are bordered on this plan by a thick green line. He squinted at the legend in the bottom right-hand corner of the map. Green box indicates stage 3 development, work proposed, see attached addendum. He unfolded the rest of the papers, and no attached addendum. Marie drew in a breath.
That probably means there are no plans for that spot for the foreseeable future.
Then it could be a pretty good place to hide someone,
Jackman said. He turned to Gary. Can you actually read those geophysi things?
Not with any accuracy, sir. We could easily be looking at the foundations of earlier structures on that site, a barn or something like that.
Then we need an expert.
And I believe I can help you there, dear friend.
They all turned around. Rory Wilkinson was standing in the doorway.
Sorry, I've been earwigging on your fascinating conversation. It just so happens that I've an old friend at the university that knows a lot about all this. He's an archaeology student, but don't be fooled by the student. He's been on digs all over the world, and he's doing a paper on the use of various non-invasive technologies in archaeology. His name is Ted Watchman. You'll like him.
Rory pulled out his phone.
And it will be my great pleasure to secure his services for you.
Jackman nodded briskly. Brilliant. Ask for his help, and, Rory, do stress the importance. This girl is still missing, but she might just be alive.
Consider it done.
Rory talked for a few minutes, then turned to Jackman.
Should he meet you here, or at the site?
Tell him to go directly to Windrush. We'll meet him there.
Jackman and his team arrived at the old sanatorium before their new recruit. With a shiver, Jackman hurried back into the foyer and saw the dark figure of Micah Lee watching them from his tiny porter's room. He seemed to be concentrating on Marie in particular, and the look on his face was one of utter hatred. Halfway across the hall, Jackman turned and stared back at Lee. It took considerable resolve to hold a gaze of such intense loathing. Eventually, Lee broke off and looked away. Max's phone rang as Jackman hurried over to rejoin the team. He listened and pulled a face.
The fire chief is trying to locate a heat-seeking camera. They share one with several other stations, but it's not on base at present.
Same old story. No bloody money for anything these days. He said he'll ring me when he finds one.
He put away his phone.
Sir, with all this going on, I forgot to tell you that I contacted Stefan, the interpreter. There is one possible missing woman. Her name is Aija. Aija Ozzolini. She's not Polish, she's Latvian. And she definitely uses a different name when she's around English-speaking people. He's trying to find out what that is.
Jackman's heart beat faster. Has she been missing long?
She's not been officially reported missing at all, but her community is definitely worried about her, and the timing fits like a glove.
They wandered over to the place where the maps showed unidentified marks beneath the ground. The area behind the storehouses consisted of flat concrete and scrubby, tired grass, surrounded by wind-blasted shrubs, brambles and weeds. Even the old barn and storeroom seemed lacking in character compared with the house, which, although decrepit, was impressive in an aging Victorian Gothic style.
This is definitely a spot worth checking out when the prof's mate gets here.
Gary stared down at the geophysical map.
Nothing to show on the surface, though.
They all looked around.
Nothing at all,
said Rosie, sounding disappointed. Max kicked impatiently at some loose shingle.
This place is bleeding miserable.
Marie sat on a low stone wall, a little apart from the others, and stared out across the wetlands. How different the place felt from when she had been there as a young copper. There had always been an air of mystery to it, but it was a very old property, where many people had died over the course of the years. It had been a hospital, too, after all. Stories about the place had been passed on, changing and being embellished, until they became part of folklore. When she was on her course, Marie had revelled in these stories, but today the place had a different feel to it. Marie was a down-to-earth, no-nonsense woman,
but even she felt as if something dark and unwholesome had draped itself over the old building and all the land around it. A skein of greylags flew across the marsh. They wheeled and landed neatly on a lime-green patch of sedge close to the water. Their harsh, honking calls blended perfectly into the dreary landscape. Marie felt a hand gently rest on her shoulder.
"Does this place give you the creeps?"
asked Rosie softly.
"Because it definitely does me."
"Me too," added Gary.
They both sat down beside her on the wall, and Gary stared at the dust that clung to his polished black boots.
"My sister hated the stench of the marshes."
Jackman ambled towards them.
"Your sister died, didn't she?"
Gary nodded.
"Not long ago." "Is that why you wanted to change the scenery?"
Jackman said gently.
"It was partly the case. But working at Harlem Marsh, Nick was..."
Gary sighed.
"Did you come here a lot, you and your sister?"
asked Marie.
"Only when we were bringing one of the animals to see the vet."
He pointed across to the other side of the Roman bank, where a small farmhouse nestled in a clump of trees.
"Our vet lived over there. He used to do consultations from his front room. Still lives there, I believe. Although, now he has a modern surgery in Harlan Marsh Town. Nice bloke. Great with our dogs." "Even so, Anne hated coming out here."
Rosie tilted her head.
"Why?"
Gary smiled sadly, took out his warrant card holder and removed a small colour photo.
"My sister Anne."
Marie hid a smile. They looked like twins.
"Right from when she were a little kid, she would do anything rather than go across Hobbs End Marsh."
Gary pointed to the area immediately in front of them.
"That stretch over there, years ago, it was called Chapel Marsh, but the name changed during the war. It has always had a bad reputation, and most of the older locals still refuse to go out there."
Jackman gave a little sigh. "Every local knew some weird and wonderful story, and it certainly got in the way of their investigations." He had little time for mumbo-jumbo.
"So what superstitious crap keeps them away?" he asked. "This part of the coast is one of the richest areas for collecting samphire. It should be a little gold mine. So what are they scared of? Jack-o'-lanterns or boggarts? The green mist? Or perhaps it's the black dog?"
Gary smiled and raised his hands.
I know, superstition is alive and well and living in Lincolnshire." His smile faded. "But even I don't like this part. And I really don't believe in boggarts."
"But your sister did."
Rosie handed him the photo.
"Oh no, Anne didn't believe in all that stuff. I think all those stories she heard as a kid affected her, and she did have some sort of odd sensitivity to atmosphere. It's difficult to explain, but there were certain places that upset her quite badly."
He looked out over the sedge and reeds of the watery marsh.
"And this was one of them."
Gary took the picture back, stared at it for a moment, and then carefully returned it to his warrant card holder.
"Frankly, although I think Anne was right about the place, there might have been other reasons for the locals keeping away. People say they've seen someone in dark clothes walking around at night. They say only a devil would walk those paths in darkness."
He held up his hands and grinned.
"But I say that a smuggler would certainly walk here. This marsh meets the Wash, and the Wash meets the North Sea."
He raised an eyebrow.
"And the North Sea meets boats stuffed with illegal incoming drugs,"
Jackman nodded.
"We've already talked about this, but in more historical terms."
"We've got rid of most of the trade in this area, but you'll never stamp it out completely. There's always some silly sod ready to take on the marsh and the killer tides," added Gary.
"So what was the original folklore story about this spot? And why was your sister so affected by it?"
Rosie leaned forward, her elbows resting on her knees.
"I forget the whole story, but it is supposed to be one of those places where weird natural phenomena occur when the weather is just right. And you can imagine what the old webfoots make of them. Mind you, although all marshes have their ghost lights, it's the sheer abundance and regularity of the marsh lights here that make it different.
That and the strange noises. A whole plethora of weird sounds come from Hobbs End. Something to do with movement in the boggy soil, I think. Anyway, one day when we were walking our dogs up to the wash bank, Anne said she heard whisperings, voices, saying things she didn't want to listen to. It scared her after death. Then a few years back, my old dog did a runner after a visit to the vets, and we came down here looking for him. Anne heard things then, too.
Same sort of whisperings.
Rosie was beginning to sound like a schoolgirl in the dorm at midnight.
No. She said it was more like church music, chanting or singing. It had her in pieces. She fair ran off the marsh, she did.
A boggart that sings. That's a new one for the old crones to pass around when they've finished reading the tea leaves.
Jackman shook his head.
Where the hell is our archaeologist?
We're sitting around telling bloody stories while Emily could be breathing her last.
I'll go back to the house and look out for him, sir.
Rosie brushed dried grass off her trousers.
Max stood up immediately.
I'll go with you.
Marie watched them walk away, then turned to look back over the lonely stretch of marsh. She wanted terribly to be gone from here. Gary pointed back to the house.
Looks like our man's here, Sarge.
Rosie's waving to us. Shall we go? A white van, dirty, dented and half-dead, groaned to a halt behind their police car. Ted Watchman, the young man who got out, could be nothing other than an archaeology student. His wavy hair was unfashionably long. He wore round, wire-rimmed glasses and mismatched clothes.
The fire chief sent you this little beauty, sir. Lovely bit of kit,
the uniformed sergeant said, looking at the thermal imaging camera with undisguised longing before passing it to Jackman.
I hope you know how it works.
If you're stuck, Inspector, I do.
Hey, that's not your average handheld job, either. That's a state-of-the-art industrial model.
Ted smiled.
As long as it works, I don't care what it is,
Jackman mumbled.
So, where did the fire service get it from, if it's not standard issue?
The sergeant smiled grimly.
I've been told to tell you to guard it with your life. It's on loan from a search and rescue team, and apparently it's worth a couple of grand more than my car.
Hastily, Jackman passed it to Ted.
I'll leave it to the expert, thank you. But as a civilian, I need to explain the risks involved should you need to accompany us anywhere of possible danger.
As I think I'm the only person here who can operate this camera, and because I've been in some very dangerous places before, sir,
Ted grinned.
I'm game if you are.
That's not the kind of risk assessment that I was thinking of, Mr. Watchman, but we seriously need your help.
Gary handed Ted the geophysical surveys. This is the area that interests us, sir. He circled his finger around the storerooms and the barn, and his voice was grave.
We're looking for anywhere that may conceal a missing girl. Time is of the essence.
Call me Ted, and Rory told me what you're looking for.
He took the plans and stared at them.
Hey, this was the Roman villa dig, wasn't it?
He flopped down on the ground and spread the sheets around him.
Apparently, Jackman said.
I've seen some of these before. It was an absolute travesty that this dig was aborted. The university was certain they could have made a monumental find here.
He bent closer to the printouts and let out a whistle.
Whoa, there's a lot going on here.
He looked up at Jackman.
Can I see the actual area, please?
Sure, come on.
Ted strode alongside Jackman.
I've got some equipment in my van. I brought everything I could think of that might be useful.
Good. But I cannot stress enough how quickly we need to move.
Okay. We'll check out what we've got first, and then take it from there. That camera you've borrowed could save us hours.
Jackman's heart sank.
We don't have hours, Ted. This is not archaeology. If there's a girl down there, she might be dying. It's crucial that we find her.
For the next 15 minutes, Ted paced, measured, consulted his surveys and muttered to himself. Then he began drawing in a large, plain A4 notebook. Jackman felt like shaking him. Ted let out a long, noisy breath.
Right. Well, normally at this point I'd do checks of my own. Use an EM conductivity instrument.
maybe even run a ground-penetrating radar check to confirm my initial interpretation. But if time really is so important...
Believe me, Ted, it is, growled Marie.
Then this is what I consider to be beneath this area, given all I have are old geophys surveys.
He thrust the drawing at them.
There was another building here. Looks like a large, long structure. Its foundations can clearly be seen, and they extend beyond the present storerooms and the barn.
He blinked at Jackman and pushed a lock of hair from his eyes.
My guess is that it was a much earlier storehouse of some kind with an extensive cellar system of its own. The upper part was demolished, and the present barn, stores, and yard erected over the top of it.
Jackman looked carefully at his sketch. And these? He pointed to a network of double lines. Ted's eyes glinted.
Tunnels, Detective Inspector. Probably six or more. Some going under the main house, some extending towards the highway, and some leading right out onto Hobbs End Marsh.
Chapter 18 Jackman had no proof that Emily was being held in the tunnels beneath Windrush. He had no proof that the tunnels were even accessible. He had coerced a small army of uniformed officers into searching a dangerous wreck of a building with little or no justification. And he had got one of his detectives to sweet-talk the fire department into loaning him equipment that was worth a small fortune. Even the university had sent one of their finest, complete with enough technology to unearth a lost city. And now he had requested and received reinforcements in order to find the entrances to six underground tunnels that might not even exist. He was beginning to doubt his sanity until the team gathered in a circle on the foyer floor and held a discussion, and Jackman found that they all agreed with him. Rose's expression was eager.
It all follows, sir. Small things, I know, but they add up. You told us Tony Clarkson heard something like a chorister. Gary's sister heard some kind of choral church music, and from these maps and Gary's description of where she was, they were right over one of the tunnels.
And Michael Lee, Charlie Button whispered, is definitely hiding something.
Whatever. Even if all this turns out to be a crock of shit, Max added, there are underground rooms and tunnels beneath this dump, so our girl could be being hid in one of them. End of. Let's search this place.
Marie patted Max on the back.
Can't argue with that, can we, sir?
It made sense. A university expert had pointed to underground structures that could easily be used as places of concealment for an abducted girl. And Jackman was convinced that Emily was somewhere very close by. It was time to bite the bullet.
If I've got this wrong, the super will crucify me, publicly.
Jackman watched the preparations for the search and considered his position. He came to the conclusion that he was skating on thin ice. 3 o'clock came and went, and the search parties determined that four of the six tunnels were either collapsed or inaccessible. But Jackman still believed that they would find her down there. The call came just before the purple evening shadows began to spread across the marsh.
We found an entrance, sir.
The policewoman was red-faced and sweating.
It's the marsh tunnel, and it runs for about a quarter of a mile out into Hobbs End.
Jackman saw a flush of excitement darken Marie's pale face.
Where is it? He asked.
There's an old building there, sir. Little more than lumps of concrete and partially collapsed walls. I suppose it was an old cottage that was abandoned because of the danger of flooding. It's a little way above sea level, and has a hatch that leads to some kind of cellar, and then a door into the tunnel itself.
She wiped her forearm across her brow.
We've been down as far as the door. It's locked, so we'd like permission to break it down. We can't just burst in without authority, can we, sir?
In order to protect a life, you can. And I believe that someone is in mortal danger. As soon as the rest of the team arrive, we'll follow you, Constable, and we'll go in.
The marsh path was narrow and uneven. They ran, slipping and tripping, until they reached the derelict building. As he paused to get his breath back, Jackman saw Marie looking thoughtfully at the moss-covered piles of masonry and ancient brickwork. He thought she was also sure they were in the right place. One by one, they eased through the old hatch and found themselves in a tiny cellar. The stench of damp mildew and rotting plant life made them gag. Unlike the cellar, the door to the tunnel was new. Jackman stared at it. The wood looked strong, and the heavy-duty lock had fresh oil glistening around it. A police constable stood waiting, a weighty metal enforcer under his muscled arm.
"Sir?"
He looked at Jackman and swung the piece of equipment upwards in readiness.
This was it.
Jackman's heart raced. He looked around at his team and knew that they all felt the same. Even Ted Watchman, gently cradling the precious thermal camera like a newborn baby, looked as though he had been wired to a socket and was waiting for the switch to be thrown. It took half a dozen blows to shatter the lock. Then they moved forward. Jackman began to run. The light from their torches bounced off the walls and made intricate patterns on the roof of the tunnels. Jackman wondered where they were heading. Ted puffed along beside him.
"We must be getting close to Windrush House now, Inspector. According to the survey, the tunnel should be finishing soon."
"There's a door up ahead, boss," called back Rosie, who had sprinted ahead.
"We're going to need that enforcer again."
Jackman raised a hand. "Wait, all of you. And keep the voices down for a moment." They had no idea what they would find in there. For all they knew, their abductor could be waiting with a knife to Emily's throat, or she could be sitting on a homemade bomb. Or it could be an empty room.
"Okay, Ted. This is your moment," Jackman said grimly. "I need to know if there's anything alive behind that door."
He heard the young archaeologist exhale nervously and move closer to the heavy wooden door. He carefully unfolded the camera's display screen and pressed a series of buttons. The screen came alive, and he moved it from left to right. The whole search team was holding their breaths. Ted remained silent, angling the camera this way and that, and then he gave a little sigh. Jackman's heart sank. Then Ted whispered,
"Yes. There's a heat source. It's faint, very faint, but it's there."
"Just one?"
"Just one, I'm certain of it."
Ted stepped back.
"Inspector, it seems to be a very big area in there. In fact, it's massive."
"Constable, break it down."
They all stood back to give the big policeman room to swing the enforcer. Jackman felt sick with apprehension. It might be Emily, or it might be a stray cat. If Emily was there, what state would she be in? And if it was a cat? Jackman thought about the massive search party and everything it entailed, and imagined the ice cracking beneath his feet. Chapter 19. As the enforcer crashed into the door, Marie began to ready herself. She had no idea what lay on the other side, and she suspected that it might haunt her for some time to come. She looked around at her colleagues and saw that they were all becoming increasingly uncomfortable. Right now they didn't need time to think. They needed action. It was taking too long to break down that door. At last, the door began to give way. A few seconds more and they would be in. Marie moved from foot to foot impatiently, and then looked up. Above the door hung a carefully painted sign. It read, "Children's Ward."
"We're through!"
The call echoed down the tunnel, and Marie's heart lurched. She moved to Jackman's side and steeled herself. In the flickering shadows of their torches, nothing seemed real, and Jackman felt as if he had been thrust into some freakish nightmare. He had been prepared to find either a girl's body or a terrified teenager, possibly injured, but certainly tied up and gagged. But it was nothing like that. The children's ward was big, some 70 feet long. Along the entire length of the far wall stretched a row of metal-framed hospital beds, all with pillows. Covers. Occupants. Jackman clapped a hand over his mouth. His wide eyes travelled slowly down the row. How many were there, for God's sake? The silver beam of his maglite caught the pillows and revealed decaying flesh and skulls. There were shocked murmurs, and someone retched. Stay where you are. Keep back, all of you. I want no one contaminating this scene, he said steadily.
There's a light bulb.
A torch beam pointed upwards and someone called out, My God, there's electricity down here.
There's a switch here.
Jackman recognized Gary's voice.
D.I. Jackman, shall I?
Jackman noted Gary Pritchard's thoughtfulness. He had known what the shock of illuminating the scene without warning might have done to his colleagues. Jackman's voice betrayed no hint of emotion.
Do it, Gary. We're ready. Just think about Emily. We have to find her as quickly as we can.
Gary flicked the switch. Thankfully, the light was dim. A string of low wattage lamps swung from the ceiling, although they did little to soften the horror that surrounded them.
Get that bloody camera working, Mr. Watchman, Jackman called out. We need to locate her without contaminating the whole place. If you can bear to, just find out which one is still alive, and if you haven't the stomach, give the camera to me.
As Ted lifted the camera, Jackman called Marie to his side, and together they appraised the scene. All the beds except one held a body. Beside each bed was a small cabinet, with a small glass vase of freshly picked flowers. The patients lay silently, some younger, some older. Their hands were folded over the top of the sheets, and their heads rested on faded, dusty pillows. Marie counted out loud. There were 13 of them. Some were like sleeping dolls, some nothing but bare bones and fleshless skulls. Some had the translucent parchment skin of a mummy, while others were still putrefying, which accounted for the sickening stench. Suddenly Ted called out,
I've picked her up. She's in the third bed from the end.
Get the medics, Marie, with me.
Jackman ran down the row until he saw rich dark hair cascading over a fresh pillow.
Oh, Emily, he breathed. We've got you. We've got you now.
He took the girl's hand in his and looked up at Marie.
It's cold, but not deathly cold.
He called out to Ted.
Could you face checking the other beds with the camera? Most of them are long gone, but maybe.
Is she?
Ted called back.
I mean, I saw heat still in her. She can't be.
I have no idea, Ted.
Jackman touched Emily's neck, desperately feeling for a pulse, but he felt nothing.
She might be alive, but I think she's been heavily drugged. She needs medical attention and fast.
The heavy camera shook in his hands as Ted swept the room.
She's the only one, I'm afraid.
Okay. I didn't expect anything else, but we needed to check. Thank you, Ted.
Not quite the kind of discovery I'm used to unearthing, said the young man shakily. Thank God.
Jackman stood up. Marie, check whether there's another way in or out. The rest of you get back down the tunnel. Tell the sergeant that this whole area, house and grounds, are to be sealed off. No one in, and apart from the medics and an escort, no one out. He looked at his team, all of them poised, ready for instruction. Rosie, we need the pathologist. Speak to Rory Wilkinson and tell him to muster as many scene of crime officers as he can. He'll have to ask other districts for help. In order to avoid cross-contamination, there has to be one socko for each victim.
so he's going to need a truckload. Somehow we have to get Emily to safety and still try to preserve the integrity of this scene for forensics. He glanced down at the recumbent figure on the bed. Gary, I want Benedict Broom and Michael Lee picked up immediately.